This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We all know that a good night's sleep is important, but we might not know just how important. So here's some context. Doctors say sleep is the third pillar of health, along with eating well and exercise. And medical research shows that too little sleep is associated with a host of problems, including increased risk of heart disease, high blood pressure, cancer, obesity, and decreased cognitive ability.
So to put it bluntly, without enough sleep, you get sick, fat, and stupid. That's how one sleep expert put it to reporter Karen Weintraub. Karen wrote recently in the Boston Globe about how America is chronically sleep deprived, the implications of too little sleep, and what to do about it. And she joins us now. And Karen Weintraub, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, Karen also contributes to WBUR's Common Health blog. In her Globe piece, she quoted Dr. Charles Seisler, head of the Division of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School. He says the public still hasn't gotten the message of just how important enough sleep is. And he says we need a public awareness campaign, much like those anti-smoking messages from years ago. And Dr. Seisler joins us from California this afternoon. And Dr. Seisler, welcome to you. Great to have you.
Thank you, Anthony.
And listeners, are you part of a nation that sleeps too little? Why do you think that is? Or do you get enough sleep? And if so, what are your tips for a good night's sleep? If you have questions about sleep, too little of it, or how to get enough of it, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Karen, if I could, let me start with you. Lay out a bit for us your thesis in your piece, beginning with how Americans are chronically sleep deprived. What's happening out there?
Well, I think we all know it from our daily lives. We're on the internet at all hours. We're getting emails and texts and phone calls. And we barely put these down, and the light in the monitors is actually the kind of light, Dr. Seisler can go into this in more detail, but the kind of light that keeps us awake, that sends our body the message like the sun that we need to wake up. So we're affecting our sleep through our use of devices. We also all have too many things to do between work and kids and other things. And so we really are not paying enough attention to getting sleep. That's Dr. Seisler's argument, and I know it's true in my life also.
Mm-hmm. And is there a sort of sense out there about numbers? I mean, do we know how much sleep we need and how many Americans are getting that kind of sleep?
So one of the problems with saying you must sleep is that we don't know. Everybody's need for sleep varies. Mm. So most of us need between 6 and 9, which doesn't really tell you very much. How much is that in there? You kind of have to figure that out for yourself. It's sort of the vacation test. If you're on vacation for a week, by Thursday, Friday, how many hours are you sleeping? That's probably how much you need on a regular basis. But again, most of us don't get that. I haven't seen great numbers that say how many people do get enough sleep.
Yeah, but I think there's a sense out there. Dr. Seisler, let me come to you with that same question before we talk some of the specifics that Karen went into and some of the specifics of your research. Do we know roughly how many of us are getting the sleep that we need? I mean, as a percentage or numbers? What do we know about that?
Well, we know that 50 to 70 million people chronically suffer from either sleep deprivation or a sleep disorder of some type. One of the most alarming statistics to me is that around 50 years ago, about 2 to 3% of Americans slept less than 6 hours a night. Mm. And it's generally recognized very few people need that little sleep. And today, it's somewhere around 10 times that number in the 20 to 30% range. And for people working at night, it goes up to like 44% of people who are getting less than 6 hours of sleep per day.
Yeah.
And we know that that is inadequate.
So what contributes to this collective lack of sleep? I mean, Karen talked about all the gadgets, busy lives, but can we narrow it down more? What explains this?
Well, one of the biggest changes in that time period is we're exposed to nearly 10 times as much artificial light. Mm-hmm. Now, the brain sends out just before dusk a very strong drive to keep us awake, and this is true in many animals, not just in people. And in those species, you know, the animals are getting ready, they're nesting, they're getting everything ready to be able to sleep. And so maybe this surge of wakefulness in the period right before dusk is so that we get our act together and get ready to be in a safe place to go to sleep. What has happened is that the artificial light to which we're exposed between dusk and when we then choose to go to bed actually resets our internal clock four, five, 6 hours westward from where we are living. And because of this surge of wakefulness that occurs before the time that the lights usually go out, if we keep the lights on until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, at midnight, people don't even realize that midnight is actually the middle of the solar night. And for many people, it's like, oh, it's midnight, I better check my email, see what's going on before I decide to go to bed. So if we have pushed our the time of our dusk from 6 in the evening till midnight or later, that means the hormonal systems that control the timing of when we sleep and wake, the surge of melatonin that is a natural sleep-inducing hormone, is not going to occur until after that.
So you would recommend a real sort of sleep security. I mean, really staying away from those sources of artificial light late in the day, it sounds like.
Right. You don't want to have the Klieg lights on as you're preparing for bed.
That makes sense.
And many people, you know, in their bathrooms, they have, you know, lights arrayed to put on makeup and whatnot in the morning, but they're also flooding you with light in the evening. So all this light to which we're exposed, especially the short wavelength light that is in many of the LED lamps that are replacing the incandescent lamps, which had a much longer wavelength of light. Because the photoreceptors in the eye that mediate the resetting of this internal clock are most sensitive to this shorter wavelength light, it actually is kind of a double whammy to be exposed to all that light and plus to have it now be of the shorter wavelength. It really makes it hard for folks to go to bed on time.
So let me ask you a little bit more about these health effects. We heard Karen talking, or I quoted from her piece, this sort of rather abrupt quote, "You get sick, fat, and stupid because of too little sleep." You say that the lack of sleep damages people's health as much as smoking. Is that really true? I mean, that sounds really dramatic.
Well, I haven't compared it directly to smoking because smoking is the single human voluntary behavior that's associated with more sickness and death than any other voluntary activity, including guns and nuclear weapons and so on. So I'm not sure that that I would put it on par with smoking, but it does cause serious adverse health effects, and it adversely affects our metabolism, so it increases the risk of becoming overweight. And increases the risk of diabetes. Insufficient sleep increases the risk of calcification of the coronary arteries. People who don't get enough sleep, they have 200-300% increased risk of having their coronary arteries clogged up over a 5-year period. The even in the spring, when we cut an hour out of our sleep, there is a 5% increase risk of heart attacks in the week following that transition, which doesn't occur in the fall. In fact, in the fall, when we set our clocks back and we get an extra hour of sleep, the heart attack rate goes down, not to mention, of course, increased risk of motor vehicle crashes that go up 10 to 15% during that following week after we cut an hour out of our sleep in the spring. So the system is exquisitely sensitive to inadequate sleep, and we seem to be oblivious to that. I mean, people who are don't get enough sleep, when they get a flu shot, they only have half the antibody response because the immune system is very sensitive to insufficient sleep. In fact, if you're not getting enough sleep and a scientist drips the virus that causes the common cold, the rhinovirus, into your nostrils, you'll have, again, 200-300% increased risk of catching a cold.
Dr. Seisler, hold that thought, because I want to just remind our listeners, we're talking to Dr. Charles Seisler, who's a professor of sleep medicine at Harvard, about too little sleep, about an epidemic of sleeplessness in America and what we can do about it. You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Also with us is Karen Weintraub, who wrote a great piece in the Boston Globe, which you can link to at radioboston.org on this very subject. And Karen, about that, let me come to you, because I suspect, or I understand, that your piece sort of struck a nerve with a lot of readers. What did you hear? What kind of response have you had?
The biggest response I got was, am I really in that big trouble? I heard from a couple of new moms. I've got a 2-month-old. I can't possibly be getting enough sleep. You know, have I ruined my health forever by waking up for my child?
Yeah.
And I think they're hoping that Dr. Seisler will reassure them that that's not the case.
Well, what about that, Dr. Sizer? Because that's a great question, of course. Anyone who has been a new parent knows about sleeplessness in a big way that will sometimes last months, with some kids even years. Is that going to take a serious toll on their health?
There actually have been studies of that and showing that parents of children who are poor sleepers, they actually suffer increased physical ailments as well as mental health ailments, because we've talked a little bit about some of the physical health effects of insufficient sleep, but insufficient sleep also has adverse psychological effects. So people become more anxious. They're at increased risk for depression. Kids whose parents don't enforce a 10 p.m. bedtime are at increased risk of depression and suicidal ideation. So,
boy, that's, not obviously, some pretty grim stuff. Dr. Sizer, I want to bring some callers into this conversation. Just like Karen's piece got a lot of response, we've already got a lot of callers lined up here. Let's go to Sean, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Sean, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a bit of a unique situation in that my girlfriend can fall asleep like instantly when she goes to bed, and it takes me a really long time to fall asleep most nights. So I typically work, you know, I exercise a lot. I try not to drink. I don't drink any caffeine in the afternoon, but it's like without exception, it takes me a really long time to fall asleep. So even if I kind of set aside 7 or 8 hours, it still ends up eating in, you know, 45 minutes to an hour almost every night just to fall asleep. Whereas, you know, she can fall asleep instantly and kind of gets up, though, occasionally during the night, but I sleep solidly through the night. I'm wondering kind of what insight you have or just even, like, tactical tips you can give me to try to fix that.
Sean, good question. Dr. Sizer?
Well, it's amazing. Guys tend to have an internal clock or a circadian clock that runs a little bit longer. That is to say, it has a slightly longer period than that of the average woman. And it's only, the difference is only about 6 minutes. So the average internal cycle length of the average man is about 24 hours and 12 minutes, and the average woman is about 24 hours and 6 minutes. Now, that might not sound like a big deal, but it adds up day after day. So there are three times as many women who have a shorter than 24-hour period of their internal clock, and all of that makes women tend to be more morning types and men to be more evening types. And in fact, even when exposed to the exact same bedtime and wake time, the internal clock of the average woman will be set about an hour to an hour and a half earlier than the average man, meaning that it will take the average woman a shorter time to fall asleep, and it will be easier for her to wake up in the morning, and vice versa. So what the caller has indicated is not uncommon.
Not uncommon.
Now it's an average. Obviously, there are some women who have a much longer period and men who have a shorter period. But we're talking about a population average. And in terms of tips, so regular timing of when you go to bed and when you wake up is important. Avoiding caffeine in the afternoon, as the caller mentioned, because it has a 6 to 9 hour half-life and will interfere with sleep and the ability to fall asleep. And avoiding a lot of light exposure late in the evening, but getting plenty of light exposure in the morning for the person who's trying to get up earlier, the caller, and the reverse for if someone is trying to stay up later because they don't want to go to bed at 8 o'clock in the evening, then more light exposure in the evening and less in the morning would be suggested.
Doctor, let me ask you about something that I know you've proposed, a kind of a public health campaign, right? A pro-sleep campaign that sort of similar to anti-smoking efforts of a generation or two ago. How would that work? What would you like to see out there?
Well, we are just in the process of trying to develop and work our way through the university approval process of a campaign, an initiative to emphasize that sleep matters for our health, that sleep matters for our performance. One of the things that elite athletes have begun to realize is that if you don't get an adequate amount of sleep, it adversely affects your reaction time. You're not likely to be on your game as much. And so athletic performance is very sensitive to sleep loss, as well as, of course, mental acuity.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, I'd love to ask you, because you wrote about this, some of the initiatives that some businesses are taking to promote sleep, right?
Well, Arianna Huffington is actually a leader in this area, the woman who runs Huffington Post. Mm-hmm. She has editorialized about it and also created nap pods at the Huffington Post where you can take a nap in the middle of the day if necessary. There are also a few other efforts like that. There are a few trucking companies have made a major effort to test their drivers to make sure they don't have sleep problems like sleep apnea. There's a lot of research suggesting that people with sleep apnea are much more likely to cause accidents. And really what seems to be needed is some more leadership. The people at the top, if they're sending emails at 3 a.m. and expecting answers, the people beneath them are going to want to do the same.
Well, I was going to say, one can certainly understand and sort of applaud, and it makes sense that a trucking company wants to understand how well its drivers are sleeping and the rest they're getting and the rest they need. But isn't one of the things that's sort of working against us here is this kind of attitude that sleep is for sissies? You know, work now, sleep when you're dead.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a daughter in middle school, and the kids are bragging about how little sleep they need, you know, starting in middle school. So I think it is part of our larger culture to say we don't need sleep. As one of the researchers told me, you know, that's not true with food. We don't think, what is the least amount of food we can eat in order to survive?
Mm-hmm.
But somehow we've adapted this attitude towards sleep.
Let's take a couple more calls. Susan is calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to talk a little bit about my husband, who has had chronic insomnia for about 15 years. And there's been a lot of articles and news stories recently about the need for sleep, and that's something he has gone to sleep clinics, counseling. He runs regularly. He's very healthy, doesn't drink caffeine, rarely drinks alcohol, has really done everything that every expert has said should be done, and there really doesn't seem to be any solution. So it feels like there's a lot of blame the victim here and very little or a one-size-fits-all. And I'm just curious as to whether or not, has chronic insomnia ever been looked at as an illness in and of itself, that maybe some of these things that are being talked about, computer screens or cell phones, don't have as much of an impact on, but maybe there's something biological going on?
Well, Susan, let's put that question to Dr. Charles Seisler. Doctor?
Well, chronic insomnia is certainly a medical condition that is well-recognized. And there have been substantial advances in understanding different treatment approaches. And one of the most successful treatment approaches that has been identified is actually a non-pharmacological approach of cognitive behavioral therapy. And that has been found over the long term of 6 months or more of follow-up to be more effective than any of the medications that are out there for the treatment of insomnia.
Interesting. Let's go to Michael, who's calling from Melrose. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a severe tinnitus. Had it for over 4 years now, and I've been on Ambien, 10 milligrams, for about 4 years.
Michael, before you go on, I just want to just inform our listeners. When you say you have tinnitus, so that's a chronic ringing in your ears, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I meant it, yes.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead and continue.
Yeah, power tools at work, motorcycle riding, just all those things, a lot of music as a teenager. And I wasn't sleeping. The doctor recommended that we try this. I tried everything, white noise at night, keeping the lights out, everything. And this works for me. Like I said, it's been four years, different points. I've gone down to 5 milligrams, but for the most part, it's 10 milligrams. I watch my alcohol intake before going to bed, and I get a good night's sleep, and I feel good. I just was wondering if there are any studies about long-term effects or any adverse effects as doing this, because, like I said, right now it seems to work for me, and yeah. What your thought on that is.
All right, let me put that question to Dr. Seisler. Dr. Seisler, there's Michael from Melrose wondering about any studies about long-term effects from taking, you know, Ambien-type sleep aids.
When taken as directed by a physician, those medications are generally regarded as safe. Particularly if the dosage is minimized, the FDA has recently reduced the recommended dosage for different groups of people of Ambien. But I would talk to your doctor and make sure that you are getting the latest information in terms of dosage and so on. But it is generally regarded as a safe medication.
All right. Michael, thanks so much for the call. Let's try to get one more call in here. Let's go to Bill, who's calling from Lowell. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to point out that what I use is a program. It's called Flux, and you can also use another one. They're free. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. And this one called Lux, and what I do is the two strategies that I use is that this program, what it does is it slowly reduces the amount of blue light on your phone and on your computer screen so that it doesn't, because the blue light prevents your body from producing the melatonin that helps you fall asleep. The other thing I do is I take a shower just about 2 hours before I want to go to bed, and if it's hot, it affects the time that your body begins to cool, also triggers you to start to fall asleep. And I guess the doctor could corroborate that.
All right, Bill, thanks so much. Dr. Seisler, does do Bill's approaches to getting a good night's sleep make sense to you?
F.Lux, that's F period L-U-X, is a program that was developed by Michael Herf, who also was the developer of Picasa photo sharing software. And that it recognizes your location of wherever your desktop or laptop computer is and begins to change the color temperature of the screen so that it reduces the amount of short wavelength blue light after dusk. It has not been systematically evaluated, but theoretically that should help. And there are many positive case reports of people. There are millions of people who have downloaded this onto their various computers and report that it is helping them.
All right. Michael, thanks so much for that call. And obviously, the word here, sleep is important. Pay attention to it. Do what you can. A lot of information at RadioBoston.org. Dr. Charles Seisler, professor of sleep medicine at Harvard Medical School and the chief of sleep medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Karen Weintraub, Boston Globe health correspondent and a contributor to WBUR's Common Health blog. She wrote the article, We Need More Sleep, for the Globe. You can find a link to that at RadioBoston.org. Karen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And stay with us. Coming up, learning about football as an effective networking tool. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.